Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Chris Cartman in studio today on Arizona State and all the hubbub nationally about Herm Edwards. Now that spring football is finished up, let's do a deep dive. Are people starting to change a little bit, starting to flip a little bit in the direction of Herm Edwards, or is this thing still going to be an absolute train wreck? We will get into it with Herm Edwards. Yesterday afternoon, I was in a space that I've not been in much. I was sitting in a boardroom, and I've been in boardrooms on the sports side of things, but I was sitting in a boardroom yesterday. I can't say as to the reason why, but it had something to do with politics. And as I was sitting there hearing the political process taking place, I wanted to take my pen and run it through this ear and all the way through the ear on the other side. I wanted to take this pen and jab it into my eye. I was sitting there like, what is going on here? Why is it things don't get done? Like, Eric knows this about me. If you don't show up on time, drives me crazy. There's one thing that drives me nuts about running a company, and that's people that don't show up on time. You know, that's like the one thing. If I can be here, you can be here. And so for the most part, and things happen, I get it. I'm not that big of a stickler. Like, Eric, you beat me here most every single day. That's just the way that it works, is you're here most every day before me. And that's fine. If there's days where you're not here before me, I think you're off. I don't know what's going on if you're not here before me.
I think the only couple times that you beat me in the studio, twice I forgot my laptop and I had to turn around and go home to pick it up.
Forgetting your laptop's not a good thing.
The other time, I was at a doctor's appointment or something, but I also live much closer to our palatial Skyview Studios in North Scottsdale than you do, so I should beat you here every day.
I live in New Mexico, basically.
You do.
I can see Tucson from my house. Some days it's a short. I went to Tucson Saturday. I got there quicker than some days getting here.
I don't doubt that.
It's if you forget your laptop, like if you were to go travel, you take your laptop with you if you're on vacation, or it's I'm on vacation, I don't care what happens to the company.
I never leave my laptop. I take it.
You take it everywhere.
Wherever I go on.
Because
vacation.
You don't know if you could get stranded in an airport, a flight gets canceled, so on and so forth.
Or right? I watch movies on my laptop and I just get work done. I mean, if I'm on a flight, there's nothing else to do. I might as well melt some video or write a story or do something. I mean, I usually don't sleep on planes, so.
Do you guys, are you guys in the same space when you go on vacation? Do you take your laptop with you or not? Is that considered work? I would think it's just a normal thing to do because you just never know. So I'm always appreciative when people are prepared to do their job, I guess is the point that I'm getting at. And today I'm a little irritated. So it's someone wasn't prepared. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
That happens.
Yeah, but it shouldn't. And it wasn't you. And that narrows the gap considerably. On the show today, outside of Chris Cartman, there's just a ton going on that I want to get into, and it's brought to you by the good people at Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most, and that means life insurance. When was the last time you sat and just looked at your situation, just kind of sat on the back patio and said, here's where I'm at, here's the rocking chair test, or here is the bicycle test, or here is the test where I'm just killing it here in life, and I'm thinking about getting married, or I've been married 10 years, 20 years, whatever. Your situation changes. You've got to protect what matters most. What if something happens to you? So log on to Sagicor Now. Get your free quote online. That's at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. I think the big story today, to me at least, there's a bunch of interesting stories, but Ohtani is throwing tonight. If we remember when Fernando Valenzuela, I'm going to date myself here, but back in the day when Fernando was on the mound for the LA Dodgers, and growing up in Southern California, I wasn't a Dodger fan. I could care less. I wasn't a Padre fan. I wasn't a fan. I'm a fan of the game. Didn't have a team that I rooted for. Just the way that I was then, the way I am now. I don't care. If the Diamondbacks win, great. If they don't win, it's fine. I'm going to pick on them if they don't win. I don't sit here and root for the Suns. I'm not that type of guy. I want the hometown teams to represent. I want the ownership to be responsible. I don't want the ownership just to pad their backsides and their wallets and put a product out that's substandard. But I don't sit here and cheer every day. I look for players. I'm mostly a players person. I will side with the players when it comes to overuse in sports. I will side with players when it comes to benefits to them. If they've been, by example, in the concussion situation, the NFL, I'm going to side with the players all day long. Doesn't mean that every player is representing themselves in the proper fashion. Unfortunately, there is fraud that is out there with players. But by and large, I think the owners have to do a better job across the board. Charles Barkley back in the day referred to it as being a piece of meat, which before he got traded out of here, before he left to go to Houston, that was the moment that was the breaking point for him. But by and large, I side with the players. And so Ohtani is throwing tonight again. It's like Fernando Valenzuela. It's like Fernando Mani. I can't think of anything close to it. When Randy threw every fifth day, I expected something magical to happen. The unexpected, didn't matter if it's hitting a bird in spring training or striking out 20. When Curt Schilling would walk out on the mound, couple things. I would expect greatness, and then I expect Curt to bitch about something because that's who Curt Schilling was. If Kobe Bryant came into Phoenix, I expected him to go out and score 40, 50, 60 and to get into it and to have it be a Rajah Bell, Kobe Bryant type of night. Looked forward to it. Ohtani tonight, Ohtani so far, you have to understand this, what he's doing. Ohtani so far is 2-0 with an ERA of 2. He's hitting .364 with 3 home runs. I wasn't around when Babe Ruth did his thing. I can't recall anybody who's come close to this. When Fernando Valenzuela pitched every fifth day in Southern California and even nationally, this is before ESPN, Fernando Mania took over our country. It really did. It was like covering Gretzky back when he was with the LA Kings, which I did. I had the blessing of being around Gretzky when the great one skated out on the ice. It was a big deal. And so tonight I'm going to be watching Ohtani. The thing about Ohtani is he was so bad. Eric, do you remember the interview we did with Bob Nightingale when he referred to Ohtani as he was a high school hitter in some scouts' minds back in spring training?
Yes.
Bob used that line. Some scouts said he's hitting the ball like a high schooler.
And then the regular season started.
Then the regular season started, and do you remember, you were a kid with Fernando Valenzuela.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember.
So, but Fernando Mania, I don't know what it was like here in Phoenix. In Southern California, when he pitched, everybody paid attention.
Yeah. I was just a little kid, but I do remember. I do remember Fernando
Mania. And Ohtani has not done, has Ohtani done anything for you? You haven't mentioned him.
No, but I mean, I'm keeping an eye on him. He's hard not to see because ESPN is exploiting him. I mean, playing a lot of his highlights and talking about him a lot.
Wow, jeez.
Oh, they're just feeding the, you know.
Feeding the beast,
exactly.
Yeah, no, but it's different, isn't it? Or is it not? I mean, they're not showing Ohtani in the way of we're going to put Tom Brady and LeBron James and LeVar Ball and rinse, repeat, and do it all over again. They're not doing that with Ohtani that I've seen.
Trae Young during the college basketball season.
Trae Young, yeah. So Ohtani's there, huh?
Yeah.
They were talking about Ohtani. I was listening to a podcast yesterday, a couple guys in L.A. who I respect, that the slope of the mound in spring training and the thin air in Arizona and the sun-baked fields in spring training in Arizona are all the reasons why Ohtani did nothing in spring training. And now Ohtani, as I said, is doing so well on every front. The fact that he's pitching tonight is more interesting to me than it is him at the plate. We all want to see guys hit, right? But if he's out there for 6 innings and he throws a perfect game for those 6 innings, which he did last time out, that just adds to it. So tonight I'm on Ohtani. Yeah, I'll watch the Diamondbacks tonight. Diamondbacks have a plus 26 run differential so far this season. They have played very good baseball with a 2.5 game lead, and they've done it with a whole bunch of injuries. So it's interesting to me to see them jump out to a good start without really having their whole, not even really, they haven't had their whole team in place. They just haven't. And they've played so far, they played well this season. They're 11-4 so far. I don't know if you saw the highlight, and I didn't ask Eric for it, but Bryce Harper hitting a broken bat home run last night might have been one of the most impressive things that I've ever seen in sport. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. The bat cracks off in his hand. He's left holding a nub, and a ball flies out of it. It just didn't sort of maybe travel. It was a bomb. It was a monster shot.
You know the last person that hit a broken bat home run?
It was a Diamondback, wasn't it?
It was.
It was current Diamondback?
No.
Give it to me.
Justin Upton.
Ah.
And previously, if you want to connect another dot, Barry Bonds did it back in the early 2000s.
Uptown.
Yep. Justin Upton on a 3-0 pitch.
Who was that against? Do you remember?
I don't. I just remember. I watched SportsCenter. That's the only reason they replayed the last three broken bat home runs. But yeah, to hit that ball where Bryce Harper hit it. And he's just jogging to first, and he literally has like
a nub.
Yeah.
Looks like a matchstick.
6 inches of the bat, maybe.
That's cool. That's
really cool.
Stuff. There's some stuff going on today around Pat Tillman that I want to get into, even though the anniversary of his, I hate to use the word anniversary, the day that he was killed, some would say murdered, but killed, is coming up in 5 days. But there's something cool happening today in the Valley I'll get to. Dez Bryant, yesterday we had Albert Breer with us on the show, and Albert said some stuff that had some people sending me notes about, really, he thinks that Larry Fitzgerald could help him out, meaning Dez Bryant. We'll get into that. And much more. Some NBA playoff stuff, too. It's really interesting what's going on with Joel Embiid, Steph Curry, and Kawhi Leonard. I'll get into all that as well. Then Chris Cartman in about 15 minutes. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So on yesterday's show, and we don't recycle stuff very often, we call it in the business, stuff from the day before. We put it up on the website. We put out our podcast. If you're consuming this live here at 10:25 in the morning, many of you consume it at 5 in the afternoon, 10 o'clock at night when you're on your treadmill, when you're driving around. It's just different now how the industry has changed. And so you might have missed this. You may not have. Albert Breer, who, in my opinion, is right there with Peter King. He's on Peter's staff as one of the best in the business with the Monday Morning Quarterback, the MMQB website. It's a must read if you're into the NFL at all in any way, shape, or form. Yesterday, I had him on the show, and I asked him about Dez Bryant. And I know that Dez being released by the Cowboys, and he has said he wants to go to teams in the NFC East, a lot of teams in the East outside of the Giants have not stated publicly, but it's been leaked out. They're not interested. The Cardinals haven't shown any interest in Dez Bryant, but I do think it's very fair to ask the question straight up. What about the Arizona Cardinals pursuing Dez Bryant? So I asked Albert Breer about that yesterday. Here was his response.
You know, and so I think Fitz is like the perfect example for Dez Bryant of what you need to do to reinvent yourself at that position. And so I don't know that Arizona has any interest in him. But I would say that that would be one place that I think would be an ideal landing spot for him, just because it would give him the opportunity to be around, you know, a player in Larry Fitzgerald who has actually pulled off what he'll be trying to pull off over the next couple of years.
Okay, so that's good stuff there from Albert Breer. Let's go a little bit deeper on this. I'm going to put the business side over for a minute, because you can always just go to, well, it can't work. And here's the deal. You can always make it work. Players get blown up. They go get renegotiated. They have their deals redone. You can always make it work. Don't ever buy that nonsense of, well, we just couldn't make it work. If you get yourself in salary cap hell, that's your problem. If there's dead money on the cap, you just can't work your way around. And every team seems to have that. But if you want to make something work badly enough, you can do that. If we're talking about on the field, from what I've seen out of Dez Bryant in Dallas, I'm not there every day, but it certainly seems as though there's always something going on with him on and off the field. In fact, when Dez Bryant was at Oklahoma State and they came here to the Fiesta Bowl, there was stuff going on around Dez Bryant. I remember sitting there trying to interview him, and there were people wanting to talk about things involving off the field stuff. That's all the way back in college. There's a certain diva-ish around Dez Bryant, no question about it. When I see that OBJ says that'd be crazy to have Dez Bryant alongside of me, Odell Beckham is the same sort of deal. There's always some sort of drama around him. And quite frankly, you know what? I don't need it. So I respect what's going on in Dallas from that standpoint. Jason Garrett's going to get his backside shot off. He's going to get fired if they don't win this year. That's just how it is. It's not going to be Dak Prescott getting run out of town. It's going to be the head coach. And so when you take away a dynamic player, But is he really as dynamic as he once was? Is there just too many things around him? When you see games and players on the field not going full speed, and guys like John Gruden, when he was doing the Monday night thing, would point out, yeah, he's not going that hard. He has to play harder. Do I want that on my team? In the case of the Cardinals, do I want on the team here in Arizona? They're not my team. Do I want that? What's the worst that could happen if you bring Dez Bryant here? If you're just talking about a talent side of things, could Larry Fitzgerald be the type of guy that could get into Dez Bryant? Would he lobby to have Dez Bryant here? I don't know that as fact. I'm sure that publicly he would say that's a decision up to management. It's really their call. Larry's at a stage in his career where he is chasing numbers and still being very productive. Is that what he wants to have on the field with him? If you look at the players that have come and gone, Larry is very supportive of Michael Floyd. We all know how that ended. Didn't go well. The organization said about a year ago at this time, John Brown's going to be great and he's going to be ready to go. And he did nothing last season, really. Jerron Brown, same sort of deal. There's an issue at wide receiver in terms of having dynamic playmakers. There's also a business side to the NFL and the entertainment side to the league. I get that. I'm not one of those guys that sits there and says, I have to have a bunch of guys that show up in their jerseys and they have to get after it and that's all I want. No, you have to have a locker room that has a bit of goofy, that has a bit of grit or a lot of grit, that has a bunch of players that are all in. If you go back to the Super Bowl team of the Cardinals and you just think of some of the personalities that were on that team, Edgerrin James had a little bit of grit and a little bit of goofy. Deuce Latuhi had a lot of goofy and some grit. Lyle Sendlein would show up, play his ass off. Go right down the list on that team and you had personalities. Kurt Warner was grit. Kurt Warner was not gritty. Anquan Boldin, come on, give me a tougher guy. You're not going to find him. And it doesn't matter if it's an NBA team. If you go back to the days of Charles and Kevin and that group, you had a little bit of loose cannon, Joe Klein. You had a lot of goof in Charles, but you had a guy that showed up and played hard most nights. You had someone in Kevin Johnson that was misunderstood in some people's circles and was just kind of his own guy out on his own. You had guys like Richard Dumas and Cedric Ceballos that were great athletically but couldn't keep it together off the court. Am I wrong on any of this? And so when you're putting together a team and all you have is the same sort of guy, the same sort of character, doesn't matter if it's your business, doesn't matter if it's my business. If Eric and I are wired exactly the same, wouldn't work. Eric's an attention to detail guy. I'm all over the place. I'm going to this meeting and that meeting. Eric is A plus B equals C, which is great. Am I describing you correctly on this? Jared Nielsen is A plus B equals C for the most part, but he can get out of the he can paint outside of the circles every now and then.
I need to be the other need to be the other side of your brain.
You need to be. Most days you're not. Some days you are. Some days you figure it out. But to the point of Dez Bryant, if you're going to be the Cardinals putting together a roster, you could go out and draft Calvin Ridley. You could go take Christian Kirk later in the draft, and that's all well and good. Or you can go say, I want this veteran guy here who's been a knucklehead in Dallas, but give me a better, more talented athletic player who's sitting out there that maybe I can get turned in the right direction. Guys, it's no different than the New England Patriots. The blueprint's no different than the New England Patriots. I don't want a guy who's in a jail cell all the time. I don't need a guy who's getting pulled over for doing 110 and saying it's everybody else's fault. I don't need that. I don't want that. If it happens once, it happens once, and that's it. When it's a repeat thing that's always some sort of drama, sports needs to rid themselves of those people. They just do, because the common fan is just, I've had enough. You know, I've had enough of Michael Beasley. I don't care if he's turned it around on the basketball court. He took money from the NBA teams for years, and they just kept putting him out on the floor because it was like a rehab place. It doesn't mean there aren't times where you take a player and you say, let's get you straightened out when all you're doing is being a diva. You're not showing up on time or you're not playing hard on every play. There's something else going on. My point here is they should at least explore it. And I'm sure they have. It's interesting, a guy like Albert, who has great credentials, would look at the Cardinals and say, what a great landing spot. Fitz could mentor him, get him together. I don't know if Fitz would want to mentor him. Chris Cartman is on the other side, on ASU spring football. Everything around Herm Edwards, was it all overblown the day they hired him? Was this a bad hire? Can you tell early on in spring football, now that spring is complete, was this a great hire? We'll ask Chris, who's out there every day with Sun Devil Source. That's next. To take a deeper dive into what happened at Arizona State during spring football and much, much more, as always, one of the best in the business with Sun Devil Source, their publisher and editor, Chris Cartman. Nice enough to join us in studio. Good to see you.
Hey, Brad. How are you?
Great. How is ASU football?
It's interesting. You know, all these transitions, I've been through a few of them in the past. They're all very different. What I saw from Herm Edwards is they have structure, but it's a more relaxed environment. You look at Dennis Erickson, that was just a loosey-goosey free-for-all almost. Very like on the NFL side, but player accountability wasn't really there, and you even saw it from the get-go. And then Todd Graham was such a disciplinarian that just he ruled with an iron fist kind of a way. It was more of a high school approach, I would say, to football. This is sort of a mesh of those two ways. You know, I think almost like it takes some of the better parts of Dirk Cutter, but it has some of the better parts of Dennis Erickson and Todd Graham as well. I think the players, they really embraced it. There wasn't a lot of pushback to any of the teaching, and yet guys were having a good time. Really, the spring is about learning your scheme, understanding what you're trying to do so that you're prepared when you get into the meat of it in August for what's next. And I think they did a pretty good job in that regard.
How complex is what Herm is trying to put in for these players? Give the fans an idea.
Well, it's quite a bit different, especially defensively, from what they were doing in the past. And it's really more Danny Gonzalez's scheme. The 3-3-5 that they run is different than like the stack 3-3-5 that Arizona ran under Rich Rodriguez or Todd Graham. There's a hybrid position that's like they call it the Tillman, because it's named after Pat Tillman, obviously. Mm-hmm. He actually would have been perfectly suited for it, or maybe like Adam Archuleta, people who know him. It's like a linebacker / safety position. They play in the box, but it's in the middle of the defense. But this is a defense that they attack in different ways. The way that their run pressures and fits are and where the pressure is going to come from is difficult to predict. There's not a defense that's really like this in the Pac-12, and their coverages are actually quite a bit different as well from what we saw in the past. So there's a learning curve that's pretty steep in that regard. And I think getting that plus just the mentality that they want to have with the coaching staff is something that they really talked a lot about in the spring. And they said it's not really even close to being there yet. I think that we'll have an advantage on defense because opponents won't be used to playing this style in the Pac-12, and that could give them a good year or two advantage, similar to what Todd Graham actually had, because when he brought a defense, that was quite a bit different. Now, offensively, what they've done, they've stripped down quite a bit offensively. Last year, they ran every kind of run play in the book, and this year, they're trying to be more focused on doing a handful of things at a higher level. And then in the passing game, I think you're going to see a little bit more diversity, a little more of the RPO. They're under center more, so you're seeing these bootlegs. They're getting the ball to the tight end a little bit in some of these structures. I just think it's simpler, and yet there's still enough diversity that it's going to be tough for opponents to kind of pin you down, especially how much they're going under center and what you can do with play actions and that kind of thing.
Okay, there's a lot there that you've given me to chew on and for the fans, too, and Chris Cartman does great work over at SunDevilSource.com. You can check out his content there. One other thought on Herm, and then I'm going to circle back on those sorts of things. The day's hired, you would have thought the world was coming to an end, that the football program should be canceled, that everything is terrible with this hire. I've sensed some of that is softening, which is normal, although I think they're in for a rude awakening when they play Michigan State. That's early in the season, but we'll see. You covered him now. You've been out there day after day after day. Is all of the negative that around this hire, do you buy into some of that still, the question of can he do this? Or from your view, you know what, I saw more than I thought.
I think most of the frustration was with Ray Anderson more than Herm Edwards, because Ray had a previous relationship with him. People saw that as cronyism.
Correct.
He hadn't coached at all in 9 years, hadn't been in college football since 1987. There's a lot of there's a big learning curve that's associated with that, and especially when you're older and in your career. Some people would say maybe he's just doing this because it's a great paycheck and it's a great place to live and all of that. I understand it. But I see him dialed in. You see him actually really hands-on coaching defensive backs, mentoring and tutoring guys. I think that he does care, and I think that you're going to get his best effort out of this. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that's going to be yet. Now, the things that are good about it are I think he understands people. One of the things that Frank Cush told me one time, his mentor Dan Devine had a great understanding of how to push the buttons of different types of players individually. And I see that with Herm Edwards, and he talks about that. He talks about the relationship that you have to have with your players and how you have to understand them to be able to know how to motivate different types of guys. And that's something that Todd Graham, frankly, didn't really have. So that plus how the staff is comprised, a lot of the frustration that I think fans had with the previous staff is they didn't recruit in California aggressively enough. They didn't have enough resources and people, human capital in California. This staff is very much built to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. You look at the San Diego State guys. You look at Antonio Pierce and what he's been able to do. Rob Likens was at Cal. So the ASU's best teams ever have been really heavy on California kids and Arizona.
Right.
ASU got away from that a little bit too much. And so I think they had the ability to put those kind of two things together. Herm Edwards' resonance in recruiting, because he's someone that will probably connect a lot with parents, maybe even with some kids, the way that he interacts with people. It's a little bit rhetorical, but at the same time, it's something that in short doses actually has a chance to work. Now, the questions are more so related to, do you know how to be successful with the nuts and bolts of a college football program?
When bullets are flying,
yeah,
are you able to react?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been on the field, but you've been coaching these high school games. That doesn't mean much to, I mean, this is what I'm getting from fans. Brad, all that stuff is just PR stuff. Can this guy win at Arizona State?
Well, it's a talent acquisition thing first and foremost.
Right.
So I think they actually are better positioned, and they're adding more workers in their operation on the recruiting side.
Better facilities too.
And the facilities, yeah, is an advantage, right? So those are pluses. The questions are schematically, offensively, what's that going to be like? Rob Likens was actually demoted when he was at Kansas from the play caller to not being a play caller. He hasn't done it at a high level. You look at Danny Gonzalez. He was 1 year coordinator at San Diego State, not the play caller under his longtime mentor. So these are guys that are doing it new. And new leads to some you know, hiccups.
Growing pains. And,
yeah, there's
sure.
things associated with that. And then where are they going to be talent-wise, especially at quarterback, after Manny Wilkins leaves? I don't know that they have somebody that's established. And you have to be able to have some initial lock / success, things kind of work out for you, that then is a springboard to growing from there.
And, you know, you talk about the quarterback situation with Manny. Let's talk about him first, and then we'll get to the quarterback room. The word on Manny Wilkins, from what I've heard on the NFL side, is hasn't won games, hasn't lost games. Just a guy.
Yeah.
What are you seeing out of Manny Wilkins? Is that fair?
Well, I think he actually grew up quite a bit last year. And I think his maturity continues to really take off. I think his leadership is at a different level than it's been previously. He was very good in some areas that I was questioning last year. Like, he set the school record for most passes without an interception. Mm-hmm. That's a really positive thing. I think his completion rate got up. I think he was a little bit more accurate down the field. Decision-making was overall better. Now, he still needs to be a better operator in the pocket, learn how to step up and utilize that, keep his eyes downfield as opposed to tucking and running, you know, transitioning to a runner too quickly. There's some things that didn't work offensively, and he hasn't been put in a great situation because this is his fourth coordinator in 4 years. Mm-hmm. That's very difficult. So I think the last two offenses weren't well suited for him as much as the Mike Norvell offense, which actually would have been great, that he never really got a chance to operate in. This offense is a little bit more in what I think is going to be better suited for him. And Pro Football Focus actually, Brad, said that he was the most effective quarterback as it graded out the Pac-12 players returning in the conference this year. And, you know, there's a history of senior quarterbacks really being super important
they
to
get
success.
Yeah. Right, they get it. The quarterback room being so empty. How big a concern?
Yeah, so before this spring started, I was one of these people who was like, they have a major, massive problem. Now, Blake Barnett, he improved his mechanics somewhat. His understanding of what they were trying to do got a little bit better. It went from panic mode to maybe this guy has a chance if he still improves at the same rate the rest of the year.
Makes 8 great passes. Unfortunately, there's 2 bad out of 10 that he throws, and we're like, what's going on here? That's what I was hearing.
There's some deer in headlights moments where he's staring into a pass rusher and doesn't get rid of the football and takes a sack, where he misses a wide open throw. But then he does some things where he has great arm talent and he hits an ear hole shot and you're like, wow, that guy's got it. Dylan Sterling Cole is really physically talented. He's a gifted guy, but he was like totally lost schematically in what they were trying to do last year. The coaches said that he made some progress. Now, Ryan Kelly just had surgery. He actually showed up at the spring game with his arm in a sling. I think it's going to be tough for him now coming back from that, because this is, you know, going into a second year. Mm-hmm. He's going to be sidelined for a year, and then he's going to be behind the curve with other guys who are doing it every day. So that kind of makes it tough. But finding a quarterback, I just can't stress enough, after Manny Wilkins, is going to be so key to whatever type of success that Herm Edwards has.
N'Keal Harry, how good by the time he's done?
I mean, he's the best wide receiver in ASU history, in my opinion.
Already, before he even steps out next year.
Heading into this year, I think he will be. You look at Derek Hagan, who just joined the staff again as an analyst. Mm-hmm. He left ASU as the all-time leading Pac-12 receiver in receptions. He had a phenomenal four-year career. N'Keal Harry, I think objectively, is just a better talent. He's going to be a first or second round pick probably. Mm-hmm. There's still things that he needs to demonstrate in terms of the consistency of route running, being able to separate on big plays down the field against equivalent athletes that you get that are going to be corners in the NFL, having an everyday mentality with his habits and those kinds of things. He said to us, I want to be a much better blocker this year. Like, I feel reinvigorated with being a blocker. Well, the reality is that 2 or 3 of his teammates, Kyle Williams and Jalen Harvey, were much better at some of those areas last year, and I think he knows that. And in order to be a leader, you have to be able to do those things.
Sounds like a young Larry Fitzgerald.
Some of that, maybe.
Fitz said that I got to get better at blocking. If we're talking about spring football just on a whole, who caught your eye or the coach's eyes? Maybe a player on each side of the ball.
That's a great question. I think there's a chance for Frank Darby to become a great player. Right now he has that big play, take the top off the defense thing. The first 2 or 3 weeks of spring ball, he was making a lot of underneath receptions where he was like sitting in zones and understanding, showing a better learning of what offense is all about. He has such great energy that he channeling that and knowing how to just kind of manage himself is the next hurdle. But I think as they try to find a complementary third piece, obviously Kyle Williams is really good and is going to be a great player this year. N'Keal Harry is going to be the focus of everyone. So it creates this opportunity for the third receiver, and Frank Darby has all the tools to really be there, right? I think defensively there's a few guys that stand out. To me, I think what Malik Lawal has done is something that, he's probably not going to start in the fall because Kron Krupp is going to come back. Mm-hmm. But Malik Lawal athletically has the ability to do anything that some of the top pass rushers have done at ASU in recent years. And then J.J. Wilson is a guy who was almost gone. He was like left for dead on offense last year. He got demoted. He wasn't going to play. Kron Krump gets hurt, and it ended up being this serendipitous thing for him.
Played well.
He switches over, and now he's lost 15 pounds, and he's going to probably have double-digit sacks this year. So those three guys maybe kind of stand out to me. Chase Lucas is going to be an All-American. I mean, he is like maybe their best player right now. N'Keal Harry and Chase Lucas. It seems like the fact that those guys both came from Chandler is working out for them pretty well.
All right, last question, and that is this. 6 wins this year, 8 wins this year. It's Herm's first season. I think expectations are kind of like, well, with this change, and I'm looking at the schedule saying, are you guys kidding me?
Yes.
I mean, what do you look at here?
You mentioned it earlier. Michigan State early is a really tough barometer, and UTSA is not necessarily a pushover
team. It's not a layup, no.
To start the season. I think they're probably not going to be worse than last year, though. I think if they get their defense operating the way that they expect it to, when you have Manny Wilkins and N'Keal Harry getting Casey Tucker as a left tackle to help solidify your...
Ijo Benjamin's a good little back.
They have good backs, and they'll be, I think they'll be fine there. Offensively, they're not going to be worse. I don't really see that. Defensively, their talent level is not worse. It's just a matter of cohesively what that's going to be like. My guess is 6 or 7 wins for the team. I could see maybe 8 wins if things really kind of flourish. And in the past, you look at the first year of Erickson, the first year of Todd Graham, they overachieved because players were so happy and bought into what they were doing. And so don't discount the possibility of that happening here.
Good stuff as always. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks, Brad.
Chris Cartman with us here in studio, and we're back with more after this timeout. So the NBA playoffs are just getting going. There's games 2 tonight, couple that were last night, 3 games, in fact, tonight. Philadelphia ended up losing last night, and Joel Embiid wants to get on the floor and play. Steph Curry in Golden State wants to get on the floor and play. Kawhi Leonard, we don't know where Kawhi Leonard is in all this, other than he's in New York rehab and is not on the floor playing. So we do know where he is, I guess, according to Greg Popovich. Doesn't want to play. And so as this has gone on, and you look at how the playoffs have been just through the early going, it's great drama out on the floor. It really is. And I know that here in Phoenix, we're all frustrated that there hasn't been any sniff of the playoffs in a long period of time. And hopefully in the next couple of years, for you, the fans that have put down your hard-earned money to see the slop on the floor the last 8 years, that will change. I feel like there's this space in the NBA where players are conserving themselves during the regular season. It's kind of like this. You go to see the play in January, and the play does not have the lead actors. It has the backups. It has the stand-ins. It's the same thing with the NBA. You go see an NBA game in January versus seeing an NBA game in April. It's a completely different experience because the best are out on the floor. Embiid has not been on the floor that much, though. He seems to always be hurt. And now he's becoming a bit of a distraction. It feels as though the way that he's handling all of this. And look, Jerry and Brian Colangelo have put the 76ers together in a hurry. And they are now a team that is going to be reckoned with for years to come. They have pulled themselves out of the ditch, unlike the team here in Phoenix. And they have an exciting team, a fun team to watch. I actually like watching Philadelphia play. It reminds me of the Suns. Go get some players. Go get Ben Simmons. Put him out on the floor. Shoot. Go get McConnell. Put him out on the floor. It's fine. You get a guy that is just a good, hardworking player. Joel Embiid wants to be out there, but there's really what is it you're going to get out of him? Is he in NBA-ready shape? Steph Curry, there's no reason for Golden State to put him out on the floor. I'd like to see him play. I'm sure you would like to see him play. But Golden State is blowing right through San Antonio. And Steve Kerr said a few weeks back, Steph Curry is not going to be on the floor for the first round of the playoffs. He's chomping at the bit. He wants to be out there. I don't know what the end game is for Kawhi Leonard. Is the end game, I'm going to take a year off. I've just had enough of Greg Popovich, and I've had enough of San Antonio, and I'm going to see where LeBron goes, and maybe LeBron and I are going to team up and go together to Los Angeles and be with the Lakers. We know that there's not going to be a LeBron James sighting in Phoenix this year. People want to talk about Kawhi Leonard coming here. Why would Kawhi Leonard come to a place like Phoenix? I'm dead flat serious. You're sitting over there looking at James Harden and what he's put together at Houston with Chris Paul and that team, or Oklahoma City. You have a limited shelf life. They've put themselves so far behind the eight ball that even these players, the Suns have, even these players that you look at and say, well, he'd be a nice fit in Phoenix. It's a pipe dream. It just is. But so far, the playoffs to me, like watching Anthony Davis, he's the MVP that nobody knows about. He's in New Orleans. Who looks at New Orleans as a national player? Nobody. Nice city to go visit, not the cleanest city, but it's, you know, it's Anthony Davis, it's Alvin Gentry, it's a nice story, and that's about the extent of it. Tonight on television, Russell Wilson is making his debut. When it's the NFL draft, it used to be the Gruden quarterback camp that people would watch. And now, this just happened overnight, really. Overnight, and when I say overnight, the week of the Super Bowl, Russell Wilson is sitting doing his podcast. A couple of executives from ESPN come watch him do his podcast with Drew Brees, and they decide, you know what? We could turn this Russell Wilson content into the replacing John Gruden. So tonight, you're going to see a show called Quarterback to the number 2, Quarterback to Quarterback. and it's Russell Wilson, and it's Russell Wilson with Sam Bradford, and it's Russell Wilson with these quarterbacks, and they shot it over in Los Angeles. It's fine to me that it's a guy in his prime who's still playing the game that is moonlighting on an NFL project. I have no problems with this. Some people are like, you should just stick to training and all that. I don't agree. So I'm going to watch some of that tonight. And, of course, I'm going to watch Patrick Corbin tonight for the Diamondbacks. Patrick Corbin, so far this season, has been the guy that was, I think, a surprise start in a lot of people's minds to begin the season and to look at the job that he's done so far this year in a year where his contract is going to be in play. 2.5-game lead with the Giants in town tonight for a 3-game series. That's going on tonight, too. Chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen, as always. Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Everything. You can check out our content over on our website at sports360az.com. Sports360az.com. If you missed any part of this, this repeats for the next 24 hours. We do this live every morning at 10 a.m. and put it out there for you on social media. You can check it out. We have our partnership with AZ Central. Appreciate the Arizona Republic and their support. And our television show is tonight on Fox Sports Arizona before and after the Diamondbacks-Giants game. Have yourself a great Tuesday.